Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I think that a lot of, like, especially childbirth, but also like new motherhood, is framed as something that we have to achieve in a certain way. And when we can't, or don't, or choose not to, it's like a huge failure on our part. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so dangerous. And I just think, like, all forms of caregiving, of birth, you know, that needs to be normalized. And yeah, I think that's why I make the work I make. Like, sometimes it feels a little bit egotistical, like sharing so much about myself, but I know not everybody can. And so because I feel like totally comfortable doing it, I just like will share everything, because I feel like the more stories that are out there, they just like will help more people.
Today, I'm delighted to welcome a selection of artists and the curator for a very special show that we partnered with Stay Home Gallery on. If you don't know, Stay Home Gallery is my former home in Tennessee turned artist residency and gallery that I co-operate with Pam Marlene Taylor. In 2021, Pam and I created a curatorial cohort where we selected 8 curators to work with and mentor for the year and helped them host a virtual exhibition on the Stay Home Gallery website. We also connected them with additional hosts or partners that made sense. And seeing as I have irons in both the Artist Mother community and Stay Home Gallery fires, and the curator Anna McEwen is an artist mother, we partnered up to bring you her curated show called Accepting the Unexpected. Anna is here to speak with me today about her work curating, her life as an artist, and how she put together this show, plus the inspiration behind it. And she selected 2 artists from the show to join us in conversation. So I want to welcome Catherine Rodriguez, Anna Wallace, and Anna McEwen to the Artist Mother Podcast. Thank you all for being here.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Kaylin.
Before we dig into talking about the show, which we're going to spend most of the of our time doing, I want to hear a little bit about each of you and have you share with our listeners just a little bit more about who you are. So we'll start with Catherine. If you could share where you're from, how many kids you have, and what kind of art you make for us.
Sure. I am a Chicago-based artist and educator, and I have 2 kids, a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. And my work is primarily analog black and white photography. And I'm really interested in the interconnectedness of identity, memory, domestic life, and the natural world. And so most recently, that's manifested as both abstracted images of light and also sort of unconventional self-portraits taken at home.
Awesome. Okay, Anna Wallace, let's hear from you a little bit about where you're from, how many kids you have, and what kind of art you make.
Sure. So I was born and raised and still live in Durham, North Carolina. And I have 1 son. He's almost 8 months, so pretty new mom. And my work is both ceramic and textile based. And I often deal with themes of domesticity, women's work, sort of typical or even stereotypical techniques that we would associate with women. So things like sewing, quilting, things of that nature, even like mending, and then also even incorporating actions that you would associate just with the home. So cleaning or cooking, incorporating that into my art practice as well.
Awesome. Thank you. And Anna McEwen, I kind of shared a little bit about you, but I would love for you to introduce yourself to our listeners too.
Yeah, my name's Anna McEwen and I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and I am a mom of a little boy. He's 19 months old and I'm 35 weeks pregnant with my 2nd child. So by the time this airs, hopefully I will have.
Who knows? You might be listening to this episode during your birth for inspiration.
I would love to have 2 babies earthside for the release of this podcast. And I work in textile-based medium. I am a quilter and embroidery artist, and also a comedian who cannot be on stage right now, but maybe post in a mostly post-COVID world. I hope I can be back.
Definitely. Okay, starting back with you, Anna McEwen, can you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today? I love this question, and I always start out the conversations that I have with those I interview with it, because it kind of like sets the stage a little bit for understanding just a bit more about who you are as a person and sort of what ties have like been with you all your life to make you the artist you are today.
I'm the oldest of six kids, and I was always just seeking for a way to share with others the way I was feeling and what I was thinking. And so art and theater and writing were just natural outlets for me as a child.
Awesome. Anna Wallace, what about you? Is there something that you feel like connects you, who you are as an artist now, that was kind of brought through from your childhood?
Yeah, definitely. Both of my parents were social workers by profession, but they were also, or are also, both artists. My dad is a fiction writer, and my mom, when I was growing up, was a black and white photographer, film photographer. And she's now mostly does drawing and collage. And so I definitely grew up doing art all the time. We even had like a dark room that we would build in my bathroom. So as a kid, my mom and I would do like pinhole photography that we would make out of, you know, tin cans, and do photograms, so cool, you know, in the bathroom. And literature is also really important to me in my work. And so my dad and I have read books together for over like 10 or 12 years now. And so sort of that connection between his writing world has also really influenced my work. So I went to an arts magnet school for middle and high school, and then went to art school and graduate school for art. So
awesome. All in North Carolina?
So everything in North Carolina except undergraduate school, I went to the Cleveland Institute of Art. But otherwise all in North Carolina. So yeah, art school for life.
I love that. I love that kind of thread that's been consistent for you. And just hearing about parents who are artistic is always inspiring to me, because I did not have artistic parents. My parents, you know, still would not really claim to know much about art, even though they have like me as their daughter. But I just wonder like what my kids are going to say, you know, whether or not they end up being artists. Like, I hope they're like, yeah, my mom was an artist. And I don't know, there's something about that that kind of is romantic.
Like, get it on a different level.
Yeah. Okay. Catherine, what about you? Same question, just about who you are as an artist today and your childhood.
Definitely. I love this question, because I think a lot of my art actually is about the way I was raised. And so my father was in the military growing up. So I lived outside of the US for most of my childhood up until high school. And that experience just totally changed me. I have an older sister. She's also in the art world. She's a curator. My parents are not artistic either, although both of my grandmothers were very creative. And so on our annual trips, you know, back to the States to see them, I know that had a huge impact on us. And also just living and experiencing other cultures and being an observer, it's kind of my preferred state, I think. Mm-hmm. And so it definitely, you know, has tied into the work I do, and you know, being interested in identity and how that's formed and all of that. So that definitely had a huge impact on me.
Yeah. And you lived in like 13 different countries when you were...
Well, I moved 13 different times. Yeah. I mean, by the time I started high school. So
That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and again, just remembering the order it takes some effort sometimes of where I was when.
Yes.
But again, and I don't know anything else, but it was, I wouldn't trade it for the world. It was a really amazing experience.
Okay, Catherine, and tell me how you got into photography specifically. Like, you can talk a little bit more about the visual content of your work. You know, you shared a little bit about like some of the themes that you're exploring, but interested to hear kind of just some more about like the inspiration behind what you make, and maybe, I don't know, some of your training or your background in like kind of becoming the photographer that you are today.
Absolutely. So I always loved art class growing up. It was something I enjoyed, but I wasn't like a naturally amazing painter or drawer, mm-hmm. which when you're in elementary school, that's kind of, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
And so something I liked, but I was like, okay, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I never had any grand aspirations until I got to high school and I took my first darkroom photography class. And it was just like, click, yay, this is it. I just knew very immediately that it was, I just loved it. I loved the process. I loved the, you know, the technical nature of it, the science mm-hmm. behind it, but also the freedom you have and the creativity. And so once that started, I knew I was like, okay, well, I want to study this in college. So I got a BFA in photography. And then after that, it was really, I actually decided to study art education because I had a lot of friends who went the commercial photography route, which wasn't something I was super interested in. I also wasn't sure if I was ready for an MFA. And so I found this program that was really wonderful called the Artist Teacher Program at the Massachusetts College of Art in Boston. Oh, and cool. So really they gave equal weight to both parts of that. And so I had a thesis show of artwork while also getting tons of experience student teaching and doing all of that. And so they really talked a lot about how the two can inform each other in terms of mm-hmm. studio practice and teaching practice. And I'm just so grateful that I was able to find that because, again, I felt like I could continue to develop in both areas without being, you know, just limited to one. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, cue to moving back to Chicago after that and having, you know, being a teaching artist and having kids. And, mm-hmm. and really, when my kids were little, teaching was my main creative outlet, I would say. I mean, I was still making work. Still, you know, playing around in the studio, but it wasn't until I would say my youngest was two or three. So like a couple mm-hmm. years ago, like 3 years ago that I was like, oh, okay. Like now I can finally find the brain power and time to really be motivated right. in the studio and push things forward. And I have to say it's been really just a huge, how do I say this? Been a wonderful tool to help process my role as a mother, I think, to be able to, you know, my work has always kind of been about my identity, like I mm-hmm. said earlier, about, you know, my childhood and that experience. But since becoming a parent, having this tool of creating artwork to, just kind of process what that means in my life has been just really wonderful, especially. Oh,
can you imagine if we didn't? I'm like sitting here like, you know, because it's just been like such a bad week for me as a mom. And I'm just like, oh my God, what if I didn't like have art in my life? Like if I didn't have that sort of, I hate the word outlet because it's so much more than that, you know, but like this, and maybe if it wasn't art for me, it would be a different career. It would be something else, but I don't know. I felt so much like intense gratitude for even my own art, just hearing you kind of talk and process through that.
Totally. And especially in the last, you know, the experience of the pandemic, it was mm-hmm. like, this has to happen. I'm not teaching anymore, or I wasn't at the time. Like this has to happen just for, you know, my mental health, myself, my yep. sanity, everything. So I'm very grateful.
Yes. Okay. Anna Wallace, can you talk a little bit about that? Just kind of your materials and, you know, just give us a better picture of your work. Maybe talk about some of the themes that you'll deal with and what your work looks like visually, and maybe just a little bit more of your education and background.
Sure. So since I went to this amazing arts magnet school, I did start taking clay classes, you know, in middle school. I mean, I actually took like a camp when I was like really young in clay, but so, you know, kind of seriously started working in clay in like middle and high school. And so I knew I was going to go to art school. When I got to the Cleveland Institute of Art, I still didn't really know what I was going to major in. It was really between kind of textiles and clay. And I really just liked the environment in the clay department there. And so that's where I ended up. And I just loved the material so much. And it was really like everything I needed for a long time to kind of, you know, say what I wanted to say, express what I wanted to express. And so I was working with that material for a while, for the few years after undergraduate school as well. And then when I got to graduate school, this is when I really started making work that was deeply autobiographical. And this is also when I started realizing that I wanted to be a mother. And mm-hmm. so all of my work from that point and now has been about my desire to be a mother and then the journey towards motherhood and throughout motherhood so far. And so as I was working in clay, it was just like not working for me anymore with these new sort of themes I was dealing with. And so I decided to, one of the other things my mom and I would do, we had this little like business, quote unquote, that was called So Retro, S-E-W. And we would go to a farmer's market locally and we had like these like little hand-sewn things like purses and headbands and stuff that we would make together. So for many years, we collected vintage textiles from our travels and around. And so we have this chest at the top of our staircase in the house I grew up in. And so I went home and we like opened this chest together and it was like this magical chest. I really didn't know what I was going to find. Like what's left in there? There must just be some ugly scraps or something. And it was like a bounty of just like gorgeous prints and fabrics that we had all these like tied memories to. And even there were parts of like half finished projects and we were like, oh, did you make that? Did I make that? I don't really know. It was like this beautiful melding. And so that really just started my journey on textiles with this new, you know, kind of past few years of work and just the idea of like me connecting to my desire to be a mother, you know, connecting that with my mother and the experiences I had with her. So, you know, my current work, all this textile stuff is basically self-taught, you know, other than what my mother taught me, rudimentary sewing when I was growing up. So I do things like quilting, embroidery, weaving, rug making, soft sculpture, pretty much anything textile or yarn based goes into my work. And I do still do ceramics. And so it's often I'm kind of like using some of the patterns from the fabric to kind of apply onto the clay and kind of speak in that way. And I would say there's often something that's just like a little bit off with my work, like something that should be flat is like bulging in a weird way, or it doesn't like lay flat on the ground the way it should. Like it might be something that you expect to see in a domestic environment, but it's just not operating quite properly. Something that just kind of like puts you off and you're not maybe quite sure how to put your finger on it. And a little bit imperfect, like none of my work is ever perfect. It always kind of shows the hand, whether that's like my thumbprint in the clay or like a frayed piece of fabric, or like I didn't quite finish that seam or something like that. Kind of just like a look into the process.
Awesome. I actually didn't even know you had a ceramics background because I love your textile work so much. And, you know, I know we've shown it several times at Stay Home Gallery and, yeah, it's just interesting. I'll have to take a peek at your website.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like the bulk of the time I've been an artist has been in clay, really. But now it's primarily textiles that I work with.
Okay, Anna McEwen, I want to hear more about your work as an artist. We'll talk a little bit about your curatorial background and experience in the program. But I just, you know, you're a fantastic artist whose work I love. And I know your own art, you know, kind of shapes your curatorial practice and some of the things that you're interested in. Certainly, I know probably shaped the idea behind this show. So could you talk a little bit about what you actually make as an artist and some of the themes and some of the visuals that we could better understand your work?
Yes. First, I want to say I was like totally inspired by what you both were saying, Catherine and Anna. I like took down notes and have ideas just from hearing y'all talk about your how you got to what you're making now. A little bit about how I got to what I'm making now, and how, like you said, Kaylin, it has kind of shaped this show in particular is I make work that is almost purely autobiographical. And that's a really important to me. For a long time, I really struggled to find my artistic voice. And it wasn't until I took a huge step back from making art and thought about why I wanted to make it and got down to the root of it just feels good. It feels good to make art and
finding... Which is a damn good reason to make art. And don't let anybody tell you it's not.
And kind of going back to what I said earlier about being the oldest of six kids. And when you grow up in a big family, you're always trying to stand out. You're always trying to get the attention of your caregivers. And so going back to the root of that and my desire to express myself, is how I arrived at making work that is autobiographical. Mm. So, and I really enjoy, kind of capturing what I'm thinking in these very short little, quips. Mm-hmm. So trying to, take a big idea or a big feeling and put it into just as few words as possible. One of my favorite things is watching comedy, performing comedy, knowing other people who I think are very funny. And the answer to making most things funny is just remove words. Remove words, remove words. But that's also how you make things more biting, more poignant, more. Mm-hmm. And also it brings a lot of double meanings or multiple meanings to something, because it's about the environment or the context that mm-hmm. it's presented in. So that's something that I really like to explore in my work. My work is full of color and texture, and it's kind of gaudy and girly and silly. I would say that it's silly.
And it's textile based. Yes. It's mostly quilts. So mm-hmm. did you have like somebody in your family, like Anna, who taught you to quilt, or is that completely, you know, just something you picked up from YouTube Academy or?
I love YouTube Academy.
It's the best school there is.
my grandmother taught me to embroider, and then another very important woman in my life, her name's Pam Finley. She's my my aunt's mother-in-law, uncle's mother. She is a master quilter. She's one of those people who like can start something on a Monday and be done on like a Wednesday or a Friday. Oh like, gosh. How do you do that? I don't know. And so she really inspired me to, I don't know, make quilts. I've always admired her as a creative person. Mm. So, and I just grew up around textiles, antique textiles, vintage textiles. My grandmother, who taught me to embroider, she has an incredible collection of vintage textiles. And I really admire her style. We have like completely different styles. She loves colonial and primitive style things. And she lives in the house that she grew up in. And it's like an old farmhouse. And it's amazing. It's like there's no other place like it.
Yeah, so, that's cool.
I've felt really lucky to grow up around people who have a really strong sense of what they like.
Yeah. And even if it's not necessarily what you're drawn to, like just kind of understanding sort of an artistic voice or a lane of like vision for a home or, you know, a way to live a life, I think. And that's, you have a very clear palette, a very clear voice in your work, Anna. So that makes a lot of sense that like you had a model or two kind of already presenting that to you.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. And that's how I knew I didn't have an artistic voice. I didn't have a strong artistic voice for so long, because I knew people in my life who were very passionate about the things that they wanted in their home. Mm-hmm. And I did not feel that in my work or in my home.
We could have a whole podcast episode about that. That's a really interesting concept.
I'm thrilled to partner with our new sponsor, Cozy, to tell you more about this incredible app. Cozy is an app that specializes in keeping busy families organized. It's an app designed for multiple users to help you and your spouse, partner, or caretakers juggle school schedules, practices, meetings, doctor's appointments, and more. Cozy tracks everyone's schedules and events in one place with a shared color-coded calendar, A feature I love is the app reminds others about your family's events so that you don't have to be the one who does that. It's easy to get started. You can even pull in events from your family's existing personal work and school calendars. You can have Cozy send everyone in your family a weekly or a daily email that shares your agenda. And I personally love the meal planning section. You can create a shared grocery list that lets the whole family add items in real time. So you'll never find yourself at the store without the list. Not that that's happened to you, but it's happened with me before. That list is always on your phone and it's up to date. If you need help figuring out dinner, there's even a place to store recipes and plan meals ahead. The best part? Cozy is free. Just download Cozy, C-O-Z-I, the Family Organizer app from your app store. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-I, and get the free app today. Visit your phone's app store or Google Play to download Cozy today. Start feeling more organized and keep your family communications simple this season. Thank you so much, Cozy, for sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast. I want to dig into the show and talk a little bit about just this concept of accepting the unexpected. And actually, we're going to have to go a little off script here and talk about expectations, because this is like something I've been thinking about a lot. Even having conversations with somebody this morning, like a friend, about how I think I'm just having too many expectations and that's why I'm struggling. And so I want to come back to this. Like, as I'm hearing you all talk and processing through this show, I'm like, oh, I want to talk to them about that. And then we got to talk about this. So let me read the curatorial statement that you wrote, Anna, that was attached to the open call. And you can kind of talk a little bit about curating the show and like why you made the selections that you did. And then we'll follow up with some questions specifically about Catherine and Anna's work. So this is the statement. It says pregnancies, weather events, pandemics. What do we do when life, quote, happens? How does the creation of artwork aid with communicating the feelings that come with these unexpected events? With special attention to the context of each accepted artwork, this exhibition explores how artists process unexpected life events through their artistic practice. The work selected for this exhibition is both vulnerable and beautiful, and we're deeply grateful to the artist for trusting Stay Home Gallery with their stories. I love that kind of the comparison or the contrast between, you know, just something that is chaotic and unexpected and out there that feels out of your control, but then, you know, these artists who are creating beautiful objects that feel intimate and tender, kind of in the midst of that chaos, I guess. So Anna, could you talk a little bit more maybe about where your idea for this show came from and kind of like why you thought it would be a good thing to put out there for other artists to respond to?
Yes. So all the things that I had said, pregnancies, weather events, pandemics, that those are all things that happened to me in a surprising way during the year of 2020. And I responded to those things in my own artwork. And I thought to myself, well, also from following Artist Mother Co. and Artist Mother Network, I knew that there were other artists out there who were processing 2020 in their work. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to make it specifically about 2020. I wanted it to be more open-ended, but I knew that there were other people who were making autobiographical work, mm-hmm. About unexpected life events. So that is where the jumping off point came.
Mm. And tell me a little bit about the selection process. Like, what were some of the sort of harder decisions that you made or like some things you were thinking about as you were curating the show?
Y'all, it was really tough to make these choices, because not only
curating is so hard.
Curating is very hard. And there were so many amazing works submitted, so many artists that I recognize that I personally admire and that I personally enjoy their work. And then on top of that, I wanted to make the personal story of each artist a focal point in the exhibition, So I read a lot of, honestly, traumatic things. And it was, which was something I knew was going to happen, but it made it very difficult to say no to some people, especially when, you know, we had over 50 artists and, you know, I needed to select 8. And it was really hard. So the first thing
that's what you just said you do, Anna, is you know how to edit down to the quip.
Yes.
You're like, oh, why did I say that?
Why? I guess I didn't say I knew how. I said I enjoy experimenting or whatever I said.
Yes, I'm just picking on you.
So it was hard to make selections, but it made the selections that I did make, I think, even more meaningful. And I really tried to find works that complemented each other. But the way that I started was just what I responded to visually. That's how I curate. That's just a personal preference of mine.
And so why did Catherine and Anna's work speak to you?
Well, Catherine's work really spoke to me because I'm a bad photographer. First of all, I have to say I'm a very, very bad photographer. Something I wrote down when you were talking, Catherine, was action observer. And I feel as though I fall more into the action side of things, and I'm a poor observer. So I admire people who can really capture and make an observation through a camera lens. I think that that is so amazing. And I was really struck by your work because I knew, like, I had like a visceral reaction to a couple of your pieces, the one where you're just laying in the tent. And I was like, that's me. I'm in the tent. I really responded to your work. I knew what you were saying, or I felt like I knew what you were saying. And then reading your story as well, I thought that you communicated your story perfectly through your images. So I really, I'm a big fan.
It's amazing. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And then Anna, I have been a fan of for a really long time and I've been creeping on your Instagram forever. And I've been following your story for a while. So I was like, just so excited to see your work. And when I saw that you did the cootie catcher, I was like, yes. And I want to touch that so bad. I'm really impressed by this object because it is made out of fabric, right? Yes. And it's embroidered. Mm-hmm, yes. All of the things that people will say to you when you have a pregnancy loss. Mm-hmm. And I find that so, it just really hit me like a ton of bricks. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And I also, so it not only is a beautiful object that is very well crafted, but it also has just such important striking meaning. And vulnerability is, yeah.
Thank you. Anna, could you share about the making of this piece? And then we'll have Catherine talk about her photos that were in the show. But I want to hear, I love that reflection, Anna McEwen. But I want to hear from Anna too, just about like why you made this piece, and you could describe it a little more for our listeners.
Sure. So I sort of talked a little bit earlier about how in grad school, I started making work about my desire to be a mother. So over like a period of years, and I'm sure a lot of people go through this, like before you become a mother, like you want to become a mother. I mean, maybe, you know, and so I had like this period of many years of just like all consuming, you know, baby fever. And then when we finally started trying, I just felt like so big, you know, and, you know, I think kind of what I wrote about in my statement for the show is that you don't, I mean, obviously you don't expect to lose a pregnancy when you get pregnant. And so when I did lose this baby at 9.5 weeks, I was so shocked. And then like learning about all the statistics and how common it is, I was just really angry. I was so angry and I wanted everybody to know.
There's four of us on this call. I've had a miscarriage. You've had a miscarriage. So there's two out of four in this group.
So some of the, like the first sort of, so on a cootie catcher for the, I mean, I think probably many of your listeners will know, but
I actually like, didn't know that's what those were called. Yeah, I don't know. So like there's, if I knew they had a name. I don't know
where that term comes from. I don't know where that term comes
from. It's amazing.
That's what I've always called them. So there's like three layers, right? There's like the outside layer, which I think normally would be like a color or something.
And then number.
There's like the middle layer. And then there's like the internal layer, which I think is supposed to maybe tell a fortune or like an outcome of some sort. So I decided on the outside, I would start with like, and it was like, my idea for this was that there wasn't just like one statistic or one thing people said to you. It was like, what really, how common is it really? You don't really know. And so it's like, you know, don't worry about it. It's very common. 40%, 1 in 3 women. It's like, well, which one is it? You know? And then the middle ones were like possible reasons you could have a miscarriage or things you might tell yourself that you did that caused your miscarriage, like whether or not those were at all like could have affected it or not. But like, you know, sex, exercise, alcohol, fetal abnormality, you know, like some of those things is what caused it. And some of them are clearly not, but like you ask yourself these things when it happens to you. And then the final layer are sort of like things people said to me, or some of them weren't said directly to me, but were common statements I knew women heard a lot, you know, like, well, at least, you know, you can get pregnant, or, you know, try again, you know, things like that. And basically nothing, you don't want to hear anything after you have a miscarriage pretty much, except like, I'm sorry, I think. And so those statements really kind of, everything just started haunting me. And I just wanted, I wanted everybody to know is what I kind of keep coming back to, because I realized how little I knew about it. And that just really angered me. And I wanted to do something even in such a small way to just like rectify that.
Thank you so much. Catherine, could you talk a little bit about your two pieces that you have in the show? And I think Anna kind of mentioned this a little bit, and you've talked about the work being autobiographical, but just to share that there are two stunning black and white photographs, and you, I mean, really they're self-portraits. And I just want to hear a little bit more about the making of them and kind of some of the themes that you were thinking about.
Absolutely. So, wow, Anna, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm still just thinking about your work right now. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
So this series, it's a series of self-portraits. The series is called Homesick, and I started it pretty soon after the pandemic began. And we were all, you know, I was at home with my two kids. My husband was working from home. And I really was reacting to, again, the title of the show says it all, accepting the unexpected. I mean, I am someone who loves stability. I love planning. I'm a Taurus, you know, I'm all those things. And it was really challenging for me to not have, you know, to be out of control, basically. I mean, again, like in a deep way. And so this was very, it's scary, I think, for me to share, because they are self-portraits, even though you can't really see like much of my face in most of them. But I wanted to document these sort of liminal moments that I had to myself outside of our house, but still kind of restricted to like our yard. You know, I couldn't really leave, but I could at least go outside of the doors of our home. And so when I took my camera, I use medium format film typically, which is not a fast process. And so I really wanted to, again, give myself that time and space that is so precious to not only make work, but also kind of, you know, invest in myself as an artist and show that to my children and, you know, that so that they know that this is important to me. Mm-hmm. And as I was just kind of wandering outside in our yard, you know, I came across these very typical sort of suburban things, right? So there's like the IKEA kids tent, there's a kids size rake, there's, you know, old Halloween decorations. So I basically just wanted to use my body to interact with these in a way that was kind of showing myself being seen, but also hiding at the same time, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. You know, it was really important to me to, again, be away, but also like, I'm clearly like in plain view of our neighbors and my kids and all mm-hmm. of those other things. And so it's kind of this in between space that I have felt in for quite a while now. And also not so much these two images, but other images in this series, I also wanted to use my body to really like physically and literally delineate like the borders of our yard, of our mm-hmm. space that I could feel safe in, if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. so again, wanting like longing for this like freedom and connection with others, but also like the like security of separation from others mm-hmm. at the same time. And so again, this like very kind of odd in between space that that I've been in. And I felt so you know, again, engaging with the artist mother community, all of these things happening kind of simultaneously, I really felt this collective grief around all what was going on. And mm-hmm. so this was probably the first time that I have felt just being able to share these with others who again could really feel what I was feeling has been just wonderful. It's been mm-hmm. truly kind of life-changing, actually. So yeah, that's sort of the gist.
I just wanted to say too that the title Homesick, I feel like is so thoughtful, especially from the perspective of a mother or a caretaker in a pandemic, because you are so suffocated, for lack of a better word, by the people that you have to care for consistently mm-hmm. and you never get a break. And I think the homesickness becomes a longing for your own mm-hmm. self, like your own identity and version of home that you feel like you can't get or experience because, you know, you're in a pandemic and you're stuck inside the house with these people for 18 months and whatever, you know. Like, I think just coming back to Anna McEwen's comment, like about kind of getting to the heart of things. I don't know. It's like an interesting phrase to think about in the context of this work and this conversation. So I think that was like really thoughtfully considered.
Hi, I'm Mindy Whittock with the Artist Mother team. I wanted to take a moment to share about our Artist Mother Network. You have listened to the podcast and maybe follow along on Instagram, finding support and validation as an artist mother on these platforms. We have a space that offers a more personal experience in the artist mother community. Come join our Artist Mother Network, a place where more tangible friendships are created and resources for you as an artist and a mother are abundant. On the network, you will find groups to support your interests, like the Single Mothers Group. Through these subsets, I have personally found forever friends and strength in the wisdom and support of other women. Our network offers free artist talks on so many different topics. Jody Hayes recently gave us a tour of her studio and how she keeps her art life organized. We also have one workshop by an artist a month, offered to you for free with your membership. Tara Carpenter Estrada just walked our members through a trace monotype printing workshop that was so fun. All of our workshops and artist talks are recorded and saved on the network, so you can access them if you aren't able to attend live. I also co-host the morning show with Kaylin Butine. We start Monday mornings in community with you talking about topics deeply relatable in our artist mother identities. We have recently discussed how we can be fearless in our studios, what bravery looks like as an artist, and have shared in vulnerability and what makes us afraid. These morning shows are the best way to start the week. Please don't miss out on this opportunity to connect with us on a deeper level. Our network offers an affordable membership of $11 a month or $121 a year, and your first 2 months are free. This gives you access to our artist talks, workshops, morning show, exhibition opportunities, a growing resource library for artist mothers, and many support groups with other network members based on location and interests. The network also provides you the opportunity to take part in our leadership training so that you may become an artist mother community host in your own geographical area. The network has been such a wonderful source of friendship, community, and artist resources. I am so proud to be part of this artist mother world and am grateful I get to share it with you. I look forward to getting to know your magical self. I will see you on the network. You can find all the information you need to join on our website at artistmotherpodcast.com.
I want to go back to the title of this show and kind of back to what I mentioned before about expectations, just because, you know, Anna, you were saying before about like how you, you know, words are a very big part of your practice and kind of whittling things down to words that have a lot of meaning and maybe are loaded, but then taken out of context could mean something else. And I was just thinking too about how there's been so many shows about the pandemic and about COVID and about chaos and the response to, you know, everything that's been happening. But I feel like your show and the statement is such a nice umbrella for thinking about this experience in the context of just humanity in general, right? Like there are how many other pandemics that people have lived through, how many other like 9/11 and like chaotic moments that we've experienced. And yes, there is something to be said for this specific moment, but I think too, there's, you know, there's kind of like this back and forth between whittling it down to be, well, what is the thing that we're actually experiencing? And it's the non-control, like the inability to have control, the inability to plan, the inability to feel like you have any say sort of in dictating your environment. And so I really like that you kind of went there with this show instead of it just being about like responding to COVID, you know? So I just wanted to say that and kind of to say that to guide us into a topic maybe to sort of wrap up this conversation, but I just want to talk to y'all about expectations because like I said, I've been really struggling the last couple of weeks. This time of year is hard, like transitioning to kids being in school. And I have a three-year-old who I thought was going to be potty trained and going into a preschool program and he's not there yet. And so now I'm like, and I just keep saying to my friends, you know, like, I think I have a problem with expectations. I think I need to let go of expectations because every time, you know, I walk into an experience and I'm expecting something or, and this is in relationships, like I'm expecting somebody to respond in a certain way or to have a level of respect for me. And then they don't. And I'm like, oh, wow, like this is super defeating. Or, but I've just been thinking about that word and that sort of container for framing some of the ways we move through the world a lot. So I don't know if any of you like just have a response if you want to jump in and talk about that.
I mean, it's something really interesting to think about, at least in terms of, I feel like one thing that is such a benefit as a parent or as a mother is that we think like six steps ahead, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that is what we have to do just to like keep it all together. And so at least for me, I feel like they're totally related in my brain. Mm-hmm. Like, well, yes, da, 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 da. And I, you know, can get frustrated with other people in my life who don't think that way mm-hmm. because it's like, well, but again, I shouldn't fault them because it's just how I process things. But
it's our mental load as women and mothers.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So it can be really, it can be a benefit, but I can see how it can be also just a huge challenge when, yeah, whoever you're communicating with is just not seeing things the same.
And I'm not sure there is a more contrasting experience outside of parenting that provides you with the opportunity to be so full of expectation and hope and desire, and yet so completely at the whim of whatever happens, like whatever my body is going to do in childbirth. I have chills, like just really thinking about this, like whatever person ends up coming out of me, like I have no control over who this person. I mean, you have some, which usually is not the best parenting tactic, but you know, like there is this, just this crazy load of, I have all of these things that I want and hope for you to be and do. And I have my own trauma and baggage and shit that I'm carrying. And yet we have like no, you know, like,
yeah,
what other experience of life is that? Like, I don't know how to, you know, like
a tornado, kind
of,
Kaylin,
like
a
that tornado. Contrast of just yes. So much. And yet realizing that it can all, you know, change, or you can lose control like in an instant, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think what's really complicated is that like the media tells us that there are certain things that we can expect from yes. motherhood and childbirth. And there's such lies.
Or there's even, you know, standards, right? That we have to live up to.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, these are the right decisions you should be making and here's why, or... Mm-hmm. I like, as you were sort of mentioning that idea, Kaylin, in the beginning of our conversation, I was sort of thinking about even my desire to become a mother was unexpected because for a really long time I was an artist, and mm-hmm. that meant that I was not going to be a mother, you know? And it really took me by surprise, this desire and this need that I had to kind of give into. And sort of then reevaluate what my life is going to look like, which was no longer going to be, and which some people can maybe have kids and also do this, but, you know, go wherever I want, whenever I want. And like, you know, just maybe not worry about money so much, things like that. And then it became totally that being a mother was the most important thing I needed to do, and everything else was going to be secondary. But yeah, just like this idea of the unexpected has like, I feel like plagued me in a way throughout my journey towards motherhood. And then, yeah, in motherhood so far, it's like, I think also just because I'm only 8 months in, like everything is just like hit me in the face, like every other moment. Like, I thought I was going to breastfeed this way. Oh, that's not working that way. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to sleep this way. That's not happening.
And the minute you figure it out, birth,
exactly,
it changes, right?
Exactly. And I think there's so much, I think that a lot of like, especially childbirth, but also like new motherhood is framed as something that we have to achieve in a certain way. And when we can't, or don't, or choose not to, it's like a huge failure on our part. And I think that's so dangerous. And I just think like all forms of caregiving, of birth, you know, that needs to be normalized. And I think that's why I make the work I make. Like, sometimes it feels a little bit egotistical, like sharing so much about myself, but I know not everybody can. And so because I feel like totally comfortable doing it, I just like will share everything, because I feel like the more stories that are out there, they just like will help more people.
I love what you just said, because that's exactly how I feel. There's, and with social media, like Instagram, there's so much messaging around like where you're talking about the right way to do something, or the most holistic way to do something, the purest way to do something. And that is not my, that's impossible because of my body, because of my experience, because of my babies. So it's very frustrating to be like almost completely immediately locked out of that class of pure motherhood. I don't know, which is wild, because, you know, I'm still a mom.
So. Okay. I want to close this part of our conversation by asking the three of you, what are some of your tactics for actually accepting the unexpected? Like, what are some things that you do in, you know, circumstances where you have no control or things aren't going the way you want, other than make art, right? Like, we've talked a lot about making art, but I think there's, you know, we're human beings first. And so just wanting to hear a little bit about your own reflections in terms of, you know, just taking care of yourself when things, you know, kind of are just in a spiral. Catherine, can you start for us?
Absolutely. Of course, I was going to say make art, but I understand that's probably all of our answers. I mean, I think for me, and this has gotten easier the older I get, but it still doesn't come naturally, is just asking for what I need. Usually that's like a minute, you know, piece, some chunk of time to process and to just be by myself. And I think I'm a little bit of like an extroverted introvert. So I really do need that time to like, and it's very challenging right now to get, but again, I just need to ask for it. And then it'll, you know, but that's its own thing. Sometimes can be hard asking for help, but I think when I can do that, then things generally are, they just get much better. Yeah.
Anna Wallace.
Yeah, Catherine, that was actually going to be my exact answer. Like, asking for help, I think it is super hard. But I think being a mom has humbled me in a way that I didn't know was possible. And that, like, I have to have help. I have help every day. I mean, I don't know how people raise children without their parents being around. You know, my parents live 10 minutes away. And, you know, my mom's in the other room with my son right now. You know, and like, I couldn't be here without that. And I couldn't do anything. I couldn't go teach without that. And also for me, I think it's an aside from the work, but it's sharing, you know, like, this happened to me. I want to tell people about it because it will make me feel better. And it will also make other people feel better. And so there's like a process of, for me, like writing it down. And then that might translate into embroidering it, which is like even more time consuming. And then there might be a translation to like just putting that out there in the world. Or like, I did a podcast after I had my miscarriage called Life After Miscarriage, where I told everybody what happened in very, you know, grisly detail. And like, I find that very healing.
Thanks, Anna. Well, if you're okay with it, maybe we can link to that episode when we release this one. Anna McEwen, what about you? How do you accept ACCEPT, the unexpected?
Right now I'm working on just surrendering to the grieving process. Like, and that grief isn't just about death. I think that lots of people associate grieving with death, but grieving parts of my life that are, I will not get back, you know? So getting to that acceptance point. So right now I'm working through the anger stage.
Looks like you're doing a little YouTube Academy, learning the stages of grief.
My therapist has been very helpful.
You're like, I have a real therapist, Kaylin.
I needed to shell out the cash for that one. Like,
what? How do I process grief? Let me YouTube it. No, I should probably. I mean, I've been recently considering therapy, so we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
If you can swing it, I 100% recommend it to everybody.
Actually, my husband came home yesterday, and he was like, how was your day? And I was like, it was awful. And he's like, what can I do? And I'm like, nothing. And he's like, you want me to leave you alone? I'm like, stop talking, you know, like, just like the, like, get it. And then I was thinking, went back, I was like working in my studio, and he was like, or I called him like back in the room. I was like, hey, actually, I'm sorry, you know, for the tone, but there is something that you could do. Can you look up and see if, therapy is covered by our insurance? Because I've just been talking with some friends about maybe, you know, getting into therapy. And, you know, I was like, that's the thing for me. It's like, I don't want to spend the money on it. Which I know is ridiculous. Like, before all of you listening, you know, tell me that I should and whatever. Like, I, you know, it's just hard to,
yeah,
to come up.
Oh, I relate to that.
The yeah. extra income.
It's hard to prioritize that because it's not tangible.
Right.
It's not a mortgage payment. It's not school. It's
right.
You can yeah. convince yourself that you can go without it.
Yes.
Even if you can't. I've been going to a support group. Like if like really like the money isn't there. Mm-hmm. I found like a free support group that was like in Virginia. It's not even in my state. And like with COVID, like it's everything's online now. And it's just like a postpartum support group. And it like is radical. Like it's awesome to just like be there with other new moms and like yes. what, your kid bit your nipple today too? Like, ouch, you know, like what are you gonna, you know, like it's just great.
Yes, that's a good reminder, Anna, that there are resources out there that are not necessarily paid therapy that we can all find and utilize. And like you said, just actually talking it through, you know, whether it's to a voice memo on your phone, like, you know, but I think just having the outlet to process your own, you know, experience through words, I think is like really meaningful. Oh, this has been such a great, great conversation. I knew it would be. I knew I wasn't going to want to end. But here we are at about an hour, and I want to wrap this up by having you all answer our final five, which is such a fun part of the episode. So I'll go through each question and have each of you answer in response. So Anna McEwen, who's your biggest art crush?
Shelby Rodifer. She's a Chicago-based artist, and she paints. She's a sign painter and a textile artist, cool. and I love her stuff.
Catherine, what about you? Biggest art crush?
So, Bisa Butler.
I mean, come on.
Has nothing yeah. to do with my own work, but her show at the Art Institute was just like life.
I was going
to
say, so I amazing. Hope you saw that show. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I saw it twice.
Awesome. Anna Wallace, what about you? Biggest art crush?
Betty Woodman.
Yes.
From my ceramic life. She is just a genius.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Back to Anna McEwen. What's your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on? Talk about grieving.
The thing is, I never traveled before. And even as a kid, we couldn't all fit in one car. So, I don't know if I have a good answer for this. Maybe my dream place, I'd love to go to Ireland.
There you go. It's a dream. It's a dream. Catherine, favorite place to travel or dream trip?
Portugal. I lived there. It was one of the spots and it's my family background. So, and we're rescheduling our trip. That was a family trip from 2020 to hopefully next summer. Fingers crossed.
Good to go. Yes. Fingers crossed. Luck. Anna, what about you?
Paris. Yes. I've been several times and every time I think about planning another trip, I'm like, I should go somewhere else. And it's like, I think I'll just do Paris again.
Yeah. I've only been once, but my husband and I have had that conversation where we're like, we could go to, you know, XYZ. And we're like, oh, but if we're going to spend the money, maybe we should just go back to Paris. Like, why not? So I get that. Okay. Back to Anna McEwen. What film or book has inspired you greatly?
Oh, I'm not a big reader and I don't know why I feel on the spot right now.
Favorite so movie.
Okay, how about this? Hannah Gatsby's special Nanette.
So good.
So good. Watched it like five times. It's so great.
It is so great. Catherine, film or book?
I love both films and books, but for the first thing that popped into my head is Rebecca Solnit's A Field Guide to Getting Lost.
Good one. Anna Wallace, what about you?
Yeah, this is so hard for me to pick because literature is like a huge part of my life and my work as well. But I think Aurora Leigh, which is by Elizabeth Barrett Browning, it's a Victorian era novel poem. And it like just has so many gems in it. And I'm not really like a particular lover of poetry, but she has this one line that's like talking about, she refers to like the connection between women as an electric chain of feeling.
Ooh.
And I'm just like, oh, like whoa. That was
nice.
Just, like,
that's a me. Whole show yeah. idea right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good.
I love that. Okay. Back to Anna McEwen. Favorite meal.
Favorite meal. Oh, well, I have gestational diabetes, so I'm dreaming about my meal, postpartum meal. I really want a cheeseburger. I want a cheeseburger and fries and a Dr. Pepper. That's all I'm thinking about.
Oh, you're grieving the cheeseburger. You'll get it soon. You're so close. 5 more weeks.
Yeah.
Catherine, what about you?
This changes for me every day, I feel like. But today, Indian food sounds amazing. Mm. Love it.
One of my favorites too. Anna Wallace, what about you? Favorite meal?
There's this restaurant here in Durham called Pizza Toro, and they do Italian style wood-fired pizza. And they have this one with summer squash and grano padano cheese. It's like the best thing I've ever tasted.
That sounds so good. Okay. And I always like to close by offering each of my guests just a chance to give a shout out to someone who supports them in their work. Anna, you want to start?
Yes, I want to give a shout out to Coulter Fussell, who was my mentor in the Artist Mother Mentor program. And I have all of this vocabulary about my work because of her. So thank you, Coulter.
Good one. We love you, Coulter. Catherine, what about you?
I'm going to shout out my sister, Julie Rodriguez-Widholm, she's the curator of the UC Berkeley Art Museum right now. And she just moved from Chicago to there last summer, and I miss her tons, but she's always been in my corner and I love her.
Love that. Anna, what about you?
I want to thank my husband, Eric Waters. He's a photographer. He's a commercial photographer, and photography is really scary for me. Like thinking about photographing my own work is just like, I can't do it. And so I sort of sometimes joke to myself that like I married him for his skills, which is not true, but he photographs all my work and it just makes my life so much easier. And
that's a huge perk.
Like, it's a huge perk.
Yes.
And he's obviously just like wonderful, and we support one another. So thank you, Eric.
I mean, I would like a husband who's a photographer, but I have one who edits my podcast. So I guess that works, you know,
that's really good.
Oh, thank you all so much. We'll be sure to link to all of your Instagram and websites so folks can find you and follow you. We'll be sharing the work and the exhibition on the podcast feed and linking to all of that. But yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for this conversation. Thank you for the work that you're doing, for your vulnerability, Anna, for your curation and bringing it together. And I'm just so happy, and good luck giving birth, Anna.
Yeah, thank you, Anna. She's breached now, so we
got a few weeks.
Got a few weeks. Maybe she'll turn, but if not, then we got to turn her manually. Yep.
Just get that baby out.
You got
her. All right. Bye, ladies.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.